A plan to dramatically change Maine's tribal-state relationship. For 40 years, a document called the Maine Indian Claims Settlement Implementing Act has governed much of the relationship between the state of Maine and the federally recognized tribes here. That agreement puts the tribes in a different position than every other Native American tribe in the United States. If Congress passes legislation related to tribes, it only applies to the Wabanaki tribes in Maine if Congress specifically says so. Over the years, frustration has grown over casinos, water and hunting rights, the court system, and more. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn about a major effort to change the situation. A task force has spent months coming up with recommendations that are now in the form of legislation. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The Indian Land Claims Settlement Implementing Task Force recently presented its report recommending sweeping changes in tribal-state relations. Some of the recommendations include giving the tribes the ability to open casinos, the right to regulate fishing and hunting, allowing tribal courts to prosecute certain criminal and juvenile offenses. We're going to talk about all of that and more with us today, two of the participants on the task force. My guests are Chief Kirk Francis of the Penobscot Nation and Senator Mike Carpenter, a Democrat from Holton, who co-chaired this task force. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about the work of the task force? What would you like to see happen? Email talk at mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. I also want to mention that when I did the Facebook post this morning, I put a recent Susan Sharon story about this, and in that it links the actual task force report. So if you would like to read it, it's long, but there's a nice summary at the beginning. You can find that on the Maine Calling Facebook page and on the Maine Calling web page. So welcome to both of you. Thank you so much for being on Maine Calling today. I know we have a lot to get through and we won't get through it all, but I want to start by taking ourselves back 40 years. I know that many people listening right now either didn't live in Maine then or only have a hazy memory of what happened back then. And Kirk, why don't you start by saying, what was it like for the tribes in the 1970s in Maine?
Thank you, and thank you for having me again. We, as a task force, we wanted to spend a great deal of time initially talking about that period of time in the 1970s. And so for the tribes, you know, we're coming off over a century of being treated as wards of the state, deplorable economic conditions, whole host of social issues within tribal communities, things such as just basic running water didn't exist. Mm. And so so there were some historic court cases in the 1970s, Passamaquoddy v. Morton in the Bottomley case, which basically said that the tribes of Maine are not wards of the state. They're federally recognized tribes with all the same immunities, powers, and privileges as any other tribe across the country. So that goes on. Federal recognition in 1975, 76. You have these cases kind of bearing their way out, which led to the land claims, which basically said that the tribes under the Non-Intercourse Act were, their treaties were illegal because they weren't ratified by Congress. So this put into question two-thirds of the state of Maine at that point. So as we're leading up to 1980, the tribes were under a total autonomous governmental form. We were under federal jurisdiction totally. Tribes operated gaming. We were almost 10 years into high-stakes bingo at the time and had a slot parlor as well. So we wanted to really touch on that because we really wanted the theme of the task force to be about a restoration effort of tribal rights that we're taking away. Nobody's disputing the land claims. That's settled. The two-thirds of the state, that whole issue, that's settled. What we're concerned about and what we're trying to fix is the is all the jurisdictional stuff that got thrown in.
Right,
there.
Right. And so not to oversimplify here, but the Settlement Act of 1980 provided physical land. That's why it's the Land Claim Settlement Act. But there were also all these other things that went with it. Mm-hmm. And part of those things ended up so that the tribes who live in Maine were treated differently than tribes in the rest of the nation. Mm-hmm. And why was that? Why? It has to do with Congress, right?
Well, it at the time, Congress did play a role in it as well. And at the time, you know, the negotiating of this settlement, you know, the tribes were very, you know, not where we are today in terms of our capacity, our governmental organizations, our employees. You know, at Penobscot, we run over 110 federal programs with 200 employees, everything from public safety to court systems to housing, healthcare, and education, and all of it that you'd see in under any other government. So I think it was a much different time then. There was a lot of duress around this issue. As I believe the senator can talk to, the kind of the attitude in the state towards Native communities at that time, and the tension that was just there. And I think there was a lot of negotiating that went on without understanding a lot of the unintended consequences as we were moving forward. So, and we can talk about some of that duress.
Sure. And Senator Carpenter, let me turn to you. You were a Maine senator in the 1980s. And we were talking a little bit about the before the program about what attitudes were like. It was very different back then.
It was. Thank you, Jennifer, for having me on. I just want to make sure that people may understand I haven't been here since 1980. I was here for a few years, and then I went away for a long while.
And you were very, very young when you served then,
thank
right?
You. That's right, very young. I was here when the Land Claim Settlement Act was passed. And just to follow up on what Chief Francis just said, the land claim by the tribes cast a shadow over the title of a large chunk of Maine. And frankly, it looked like Maine would lose if we continued to litigate, continued to stay in court. That was the impetus behind the state working with the federal legislative delegation to come up with this settlement, which did a couple of things. The tribes gave up their claim, their Aboriginal claim to the land, and they got certain things in return. And I would absolutely agree with the chief in terms of the tribes then and the tribes now. They are completely different entities then today than they were then. So this act was negotiated, this agreement, this compact, if you will. But what it did was we had a discussion at a public hearing a while ago about whether or not the tribes are sovereign. Well, they are recognized as sovereign nations, sovereign entities, but with significant restrictions imposed upon them by the Settlement Act. That's what this task force that we put together last year here in the legislature is all about, and why we're trying to loosen, if you will, those restrictions that were placed on it in 1980.
And I read that at the time, 40 years ago, it was not meant to be set in stone. It was meant to be sort of a document that could be returned to and fixed here and there, but that didn't happen.
I think it was always intended to be a living document as folks moved on, as the state moved on, as the tribes grew in maturity, for lack of a better term. And I do want to, you asked the question, I forgot to answer it, but it was not a popular, among the non-native population of Maine, this Settlement Act was not popular. Many people had a hard time, non-natives had a hard time understanding how the tribes could make these claims and have the courts, the non-native courts, support them, but they did. And across the country, we saw lawsuits that put states in very difficult positions. So that was the impetus behind settling this. But yeah, it was not a popular thing going back.
Well, let's look at some of the trouble that and some of the controversial decisions and ways in which the act has played out. And Chief Francis, I want to start with you. I think anybody who's traveled the nation realizes that there are casinos mm-hmm. on tribal lands all over the country, but not here in Maine. You mentioned high-stakes bingo, but that's a very different thing mm-hmm. than a fully operating casino. That is one of the ways in which I don't want to say the whole name every time. We'll say called the Settlement Act, sort of tied the hands of the native tribes here, right?
That's right. And I mean, so So it gets to the whole language in the Settlement Act that talks about acts passed for the benefit of Indians by the United States Congress will not apply in the state of Maine unless the tribes of Maine are specifically listed in those acts. So there has been some well over 100 laws passed since the 1980 land claims and policies and executive orders and all of that that have benefited Indians that have not benefited the tribes of Maine. Everything from being able to simply file directly for disaster relief to violence against women to, and one of the examples is the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act and casinos.
Has there been any effort from the congressional delegation or others to change that?
Well, there has. And, you know, we've worked with members just on specific issues. So as right now, as we sit here, the Violence Against Women Act that's pending in the United States Senate, the House version, both the Republican and the Democratic version in the Senate as well, all specifically mention the tribes of Maine. So we've done a ton of work in educating members of Congress about this issue. So it's kind of issue by issue.
But you have to do this for mm-hmm. every single issue. You have to put this kind of energy and effort in every time there's a piece of legislation before Congress.
That's correct.
In a way that other tribes don't have to do.
That's right.
Yeah. So, Senator Mitchell, tell me about this task force, how it came to be, why it came to be.
Well, I'm the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, came back to the legislature a couple of years ago, and in talking to my fellow legislators, I was really quite surprised that, I won't say it was unanimous, but a large number of people were concerned about the relationship between the tribes and the state. And so my co-chair and I, Representative Donna Bailey from SACO, we sat around the office and sort of asking where we wanted our chairmanship to go with the Judiciary Committee. And I said I really would like to attack the put some life, if you will, into the Settlement Act. And she agreed with me. We went to the leadership. The leadership, Speaker Gideon and Senate President Troy Jackson were all on board. We put together. We had several meetings with the tribal chiefs to begin to get build goodwill because the relationship between the tribes and the state has been quite strained. Put together this task force, which had all of the chiefs represented, which had legislators, and we had some non-voting members from the Attorney General's office and from the administration. And we had, and what we've come out with, I want to emphasize, is a draft, if you will, of where we want to go. Now, there's fine-tuning to be done. The draft itself is very, very broad, and our job now is to try to make this into legislation that will relieve the tribes of some of the burdens, some of the restrictions that were placed on them by the Settlement Act.
And the recommendations have been crafted into one bill?
Correct.
Okay.
We may have to separate it out as we go. Our first work session on the bill is a week from today. And as we go along, we don't want any one issue to drag us down. And there are lots of competing interests here. There are lots of long knives, if you will, are out there. And so we have to be sensitive to that. I want to pass a bill. I don't want to make a statement. I want to pass legislation that moves this issue forward and begins the healing process and begins the, or maybe more than begins, hopefully.
Chief Francis, as I mentioned, it's 200 pages long. And there are 22 recommendations. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me which of these recommendations is most important to you and why?
Well, they all are. But I think they, you know, when we're talking about the tribes getting at the goal and objective of the task force, which was set out by the legislature, and getting the tribes recognized in a similar manner as every other tribe across the country, I think all of these recommendations start to get at that. I think the tribes being able to benefit from acts of Congress is a critical piece of these recommendations. I think enhanced jurisdiction in our tribal courts to address drug-based crimes, domestic violence that is afflicted on our women at almost three times the state average, almost predominantly by non-Indians, about 85% of the time. So enhancing those jurisdictions of our institutions that are really so important to the sovereignty of any government, I think are critical in this bill. I I don't know that. I think they're also intertwined in supporting each other when you're talking about civil jurisdiction, for example, criminal jurisdiction, taxation. All of those play a role in building up the overall health of tribal communities. And so I think, you know, at the end of the day, I'm really proud of the work product that we've put out. We didn't get to everything in the task force report. There's been a commitment to continue to talk about things. So I would say the most important thing to me is that the tribes are able to access benefits that they should not be shut out of. They shouldn't be the only demographic of people in the country that are singled out on legislation that's specifically meant to address their needs. And so that's really important to me. And also, you know, there's not much in the task force report that really isn't, but I think some of those things that directly affect the lives in real time of Indian people in this state is going to be critical to pass in this, I think.
And I'd like to talk about some of those in more detail, but we are first going to go to a break. If you'd like to call in and talk about the task force report and changing state tribal relations, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We appreciate brief emails. Thank you. You can post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Maine Community Foundation. Proud to support Maine Calling, a forum for ideas and issues that matter most. MaineCF.org. And Evergreen Home Performance, dedicated to helping homeowners qualify for Efficiency Maine Energy Audit and Insulation Rebates. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
The road to the White House runs through South Carolina, and the results could reshape a still crowded race.
So we better be ready to compete.
Fighting back is an act of patriotism.
And I'm absolutely certain we're going to defeat Donald Trump.
I'm Michelle Martin. Join us for live special coverage of the 2020 South Carolina Democratic primary from NPR News.
That's coming up Saturday evening, starting at 7 here on Maine Public Radio. And another fun News and Brews trivia night is coming up. Maine Public staff are visiting various Maine breweries to test you on your knowledge of the news and current events. It's also a chance for you to meet fellow Maine Public News fans in a fun, relaxed setting. And our next event is tomorrow evening at Bissell Brothers, located at 4 Thompson's Point in Portland, with trivia play starting at 6. Now, at this point, it is necessary to register in advance. So to register yourself or a team, please email us at rsvp@mainepublic.org. Again, that's rsvp@mainepublic.org. And we have complete details at our website, mainepublic.org. Just click on Events. Hope to see you there.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the work of the Indian Land Claims Task Force. My guests are Senator Mike Carpenter, co-chair of the Task Force on Changes to the Maine Indian Claims Settlement Implementing Act, and Chief Kirk Francis of the Penobscot Nation, who is also a member of the task force. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Calling in now, Senator Lisa Keim, who is a Republican representing Oxford and also on the Judiciary Committee with Senator Carpenter. Senator Keim, thanks for calling in.
Yes, you're welcome. It's my pleasure.
So as you know, we've been talking about the task force report, and it's before the Judiciary Committee now. I understand you have some concerns about it. Can you tell me about those?
Yeah, I do. I think I join probably almost all Mainers in being so grateful that we have the tribes here and that they, you know, they're still intact and their heritage is still there for them, but also to enrich really what it means and defines sort of who Maine is as a state. So I'm grateful that they're here and that we have this chance to negotiate. I think you know, some of my concerns stem from where the place of the conversation starts, and that this was a settlement. So that means that both sides sort of questioned their rightful place in this, and then they came to an agreement. And I don't believe that it was the intention that this was never looked at again. But I think some of the, you know, some of the really hard things about this is that we're creating sort of a state within a state or a nation within a nation. And that really raises some difficult issues as far as jurisdiction and, you know, where we're drawing lines. And then the recommendations would increase the territory and give full jurisdiction to the tribes. And I see that to cause a lot of problems with the people surrounding those areas.
Senator Keim, I'm a little confused. What do you mean by increase the territory?
Well, they would be allowed to. So right now, most of their jurisdictional authority is in the reservation, and what the recommendations are is that would then include all of the land. It would just become tribal land, whatever land that they own, and so that they could purchase more land in the future at some place, you know, in Maine, we don't know where. It would just be a matter of a personal sale, you know, basically. And so then that would increase their territory that they would have authority over.
I see. And before I let you go, I just want to ask, is your concern on the level of we need to slow down and look at this more carefully? Or is your concern that, you know, this whole idea is not the right way to go?
I am in hopes that we come to a place where there are changes that we make that are meaningful and that address, I think, some of the issues that the tribes have. So, yes, I am hopeful that we make some changes. I do not see it as a possibility that, you know, these 22 recommendations are fully implemented.
All right. Well, Senator Keim, I know you need to get back into the Judiciary Committee, so thank you so much for taking time to call in to Maine Calling today. Do either of you want to address Senator Keim's concerns? Senator Carpenter.
Thank you. Senator Keim is a valued member of my committee. She was not on the task force. I think if you start from a point where the lands claim settlement could never be changed, then that's going to be a difficult conversation going forward. In fact, Congress, when they passed the Settlement Act, when they ratified the Settlement Act, they left provision in there for us to change it at the state level. That says something, that they expected us to make changes. There's never been the momentum to make those changes. I understand the concern of Senator Keim in terms of what I call the after-acquired property issue and where those pieces would be. It's, you know, it's not unusual when you have legislation this sweeping, this large, fear of the unknown is a driving force, you know. And so it's my hope that we can do some stuff in the work session that will allay some of the concerns, because the concerns that she just expressed in those comments about the after-acquired property are concerns that we heard from landowners and the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine and others around the state. So those are issues that have to be addressed. And again, this is not a completed product. I mean, the task force made recommendations. We're going forward working. I mean, I think one of the things the task force did was we built, I think, a good relationship, good rapport with the tribal chiefs, and we're going to go forward working with them and try to make this thing work.
So I would just add that, you know, I think when you hear these concerns from people too, and I don't know the senator, but, you know, and I understand that this is kind of a constituent-based business and there's a lot to consider when making decisions here. I think the Judiciary Committee is tasked with something a little bit different in Maine that doesn't exist anywhere else either. They possess authority over Indian tribes in terms of legislation. They're the committee of jurisdiction. So that typically doesn't happen. And just to a couple of the comments, you know, we're not looking for this task force to create anything. We're just really looking for the restoration of these rights. Things like land to trust processes that it's easy to say, well, you know, they could buy up half the state and just put it in. That's just not going to happen. You have a lot of rules and regulations federally around this issue. If local communities object and a state objects to a land of trust process, the chances of that going into trust are pretty much gone. So there's a ton of process, and I just don't want people to leave this conversation thinking, if state regulation goes away on tribal lands, there's just this kind of Wild West atmosphere out there, and there's no law, and there's we have comprehensive laws within the tribes, and we're also governed by a ton of federal law.
Okay. All right. We'll go to AMK, who's calling from Westbrook. Hi. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I do want to comment on a senator who just phoned in unexpectedly that, you know, I find it interesting that we're worried about what's going to happen if the tribes are take over some more land, when I think, you know, how do they feel? How many ever hundreds of years ago when we came over and took all their land, they had no rights whatsoever. But that being said, the main reason why I called was the conversation about casinos. I wonder if there is a way for our Indigenous neighbors to be restored or help to restore their ways of life or a way of life that is sustainable and more indicative of their true contributions to our country and the planet in general. And my concern stems from having lived for several years in a casino neighborhood out west and having seen the destruction that was wrought by that practice on not just the employees who worked in the casinos, but the people who came day after day. And lost.
Sure. Thanks so much for your call. I appreciate your call, and I'm sure a lot of people share your concerns. Chief Francis, even though casinos are part of this, I'm reading between the lines here, it is not a very major part of this for you.
It might be the least important issue for me personally. I think, you know, it becomes the example of inequities, and it becomes the example of how governments benefit from gaming, but tribes are not supposed to.
And it's a tangible thing, so it's easy to compare, yeah, as I did.
Exactly.
Yeah, but for you, this is not the most important thing. And I know, because I've known you and others for a long time, that this is a conversation that's always going on. How can we create businesses and create income that is in line with our ethics and values, correct?
Right. That's correct. And, you know, in our people, we have the same debates within our communities about gaming and other economic development ventures. So, you know, I don't know where our community would even be on it if we wanted to do it. So this is not an important conversation except to show the inequity of it and the federal right that exists for every other tribe. And what we're trying to say with a lot of these things, even when it gives you heartburn, you're either recognizing tribal sovereignty or you're not. And this quasi kind of recognition that's gone on for 40 years just hasn't worked. So we're not interested in really litigating the past here anymore. We had to do a lot of education about the past. We're looking to move forward. And we think, you know, especially with the bicentennial coming up and all of those things, Maine has a real opportunity here to really rewrite history.
Thank you for your call, AMK. We're going to go to Kate, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Kate. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi there. So I have a sort of two-part question. I am curious to know from Chief Francis how you see this issue of sovereignty being tied into really eliminating some of the incredible disparities that we see around incarceration and substance use disorder among Native populations. Like, how is sovereignty tied to improving health in Native communities in Maine? And I see it as connected, but I'm curious what you think about that. And then I'm just wondering what folks think about the role that our governor has to play in this process, and thoughts about that. Thank you.
Kate, thanks for your call. Chief Francis, you just met with the governor this morning, didn't you?
I did. And thank you for the question too, by the way, because that's what really this is all about. This isn't some just flexing of a sovereign muscle to say that's what we are. There are real issues. There are real issues with health disparities. There are real issues with opioid abuse. There are real issues with educational outcomes, economic development and jobs. You know, unemployment rates still pushing near 30% on the reservation, on our reservation, higher in other places. So, yes, So what we see all over the country with the model that we're talking about is tribes that are able to make their own decisions, entice investment, are able to get at those issues monetarily, building their own hospitals to meet their needs, not the government's needs and how you're being funded. Being able to put more resources, things that are inhibiting kids, such as just not being able to buy toiletries while they're at school, and not being able to fully participate in the college experience because they don't have resources, getting discouraged by things that might seem small to a lot of people are huge when a kid leaves the reservation. So tie in these changes directly to outcomes that positively uplift tribal people in this state is extremely important to be able to articulate, and I think that's the goal and objective here.
Anything you'd like to add, Senator Carpenter?
Well, the governor piece. I mean, obviously the governor is a huge player in this whole process. The governor, since she was elected, has reached out and done some significant things with regard to mascots and other things. I think mentioned the chief and the other chiefs just had a meeting this morning with her. She did register some opposition or some concerns at the time of our public hearing, concerns that were very reflective of what we heard from other people around the state. And so we're going to attempt to deal with those. And I believe with all of my years of experience here that she's a good faith partner in this process as we go forward. But she is obviously, the executive branch is obviously a player in this. And we've got some work to do.
Yeah, and I would just add, you know, I thought our meeting this morning was positive. It's clear that there's still a lot of questions that need to be answered. It's clear that there are still some concerns, but there was a commitment to talk through these things. There was assignments of points of contact. We think we can get a higher or more elevated conversation going with her office on this over the coming weeks, and we're committed to doing that. And so I think the jury's out on where she is on a lot of these things, and we need to get clarity over that as we move forward. And as the senator said, it's an important piece of this process, and we can't ignore it.
Kate, thanks so much for your question. We have an email from Lynn. I am delighted to learn of these efforts and feel they are long overdue. I wish the tribes and the legislature well in effecting these much-needed changes. And a tweet from Bill. Please remember that the Aroostook Band of Mi'kmaqs did not agree to the Implementation Act. And that is true, correct, Chief Francis? But there was sort of a coordinator, or either of you can answer this. There was a corresponding act, correct?
Yeah, this is the Mi'kmaq Settlement Act. The problem is they never ratified it.
Oh.
And so, so it's the position of the tribe that... that for that to be legal, that it needed to be ratified by the tribe. And I don't want to speak for the Mi'kmaq on this, but I think I'm articulating that properly.
Right. But they were still a part of the task force process, as were the Houlton, Banda, Maliseets, and the Passamaquoddy tribe. Although we recognize as we went along, the Mi'kmaqs don't recognize that they in fact have a settlement act in place.
We'll go to Sherry, who's calling from the Penobscot Nation. Hi, Sherry, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for having this conversation, and I want to thank Senator Carpenter and Chief Francis for sharing their wisdom on this with the public. I just wanted to address Senator Kime's comments primarily because I think that these are some areas where there's a lot of fear being created that's unnecessary, that the amendments to the Settlement Act will not increase tribal territory. There was a very lengthy and informed discussion about that in the last set of hearings, and it was clear during those hearings that Senator Kime was having some difficulty understanding some of these issues related to the formation of a reservation, how land is taken into trust by the federal government. You know, it's a very complex process, and so the tribes aren't going to just go out willy-nilly and be buying up land and turning it into reservation land or trust land. That's a very complicated process, and I think that it's statements like that, uninformed statements like that, that are creating a lot of fear for people. So I wanted to address that, and also address the jurisdictional issue. When we're talking about the jurisdictional issue, Senator Kime said we don't want to create a state-to-state relationship or a nation-to-nation relationship. Well, that's the exact relationship that exists for tribes under federal law. It's a nation-to-nation relationship, dual sovereignty. And so when you get to jurisdictional questions, that dual sovereignty comes in. And so I just wanted to caution people from taking on face value those kinds of statements that are uninformed or misinformed, because those are the types of things that create fear in the public about what is the outcome going to be. And I would encourage people, including Senator Keim, to educate themselves. There are a lot of resources out there available for that. And then the last thing I wanted to say is that the act, as written on its face, may not have appeared to be biased or to be restrictive, but as it's been applied and as we've learned over the past 40 years, the outcomes of that application of the Implementing Act have been incredibly restrictive and oppressive and have significantly disadvantaged Wabanaki people here in the state of Maine. And so those are the only comments that I wanted to share. And again, thank you for having this discussion today.
And Sherry, thank you so much for calling in. Senator Carpenter.
Yeah, I just want to change, especially change of this magnitude, never comes easy. We're all concerned about change, and it's so easy to say no. I'm not addressing myself to Senator Keim any more than I am to other people here. It's so easy to say no. My position coming into this was informed by my 5-year-old grandson many years ago when I told him he couldn't do something. And then I stopped and thought about, why did I tell him that? There was no good reason why I told him that. And so my approach to this whole thing, and I think the approach to the task force has been, is there, if we're reluctant to go in this direction, what's the good reason? Why are we saying no? And if there's not a good reason, then go for it. And I think that's where the task force went. We made some sweeping recommendations, which we knew were sweeping recommendations, and that need to be refined as we go through this process. And I'm hopeful still that they will be.
All right. Well, we are going to go to another quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from McVetty's Hearth and Home, dedicated to helping Mainers heat more for less with gas, wood, and pellet stoves. More at stovesofmaine.com. And Open Circle Family Practice in South Portland, dedicated to relationship-centered care for all people, now welcoming new patients.
On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
On February 26, 2008, the world's tallest snowman was built by Robin Zinchuk in Bethel. Residents from Bethel and the surrounding area helped build the 122-foot, 1-inch tall snow woman named Olympia. It took a month to complete her. 13 million pounds of snow were used in the construction. The construction included arms made from 2 30-foot tall spruce trees, a 130-foot long scarf, and truck tires as buttons. She was only a few feet shorter than the Statue of Liberty.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Bernstein Scher and Maine Masons celebrating their bicentennial in Maine. Happy birthday, Maine.
As our global appetite for energy gets larger and larger, many experts argue the solution is going to have to come from nuclear power.
We do need to eliminate carbon dioxide. We have a shortage of time, and we have a shortage of money. Nuclear energy is really bad for both.
I'm John Donvan. The ups and downs of expanding nuclear power, next time on Intelligence Squared U.S.
That's coming up this afternoon at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we're talking about the work of the Indian Land Claims Task Force and proposed legislation. My guests are Chief Kirk Francis of the Penobscot Nation and Senator Mike Carpenter of Holton. They were both on the task force. If you could join our conversation, the number 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to an email from Brian. He says, I work in conservation and have heard concerns about how tribal land and wildlife management responsibilities could change. But the examples of where tribes have managed land and water or partnered with other entities to do so are exemplary. Could Chief Francis speak to that? There's the Penobscot River Restoration Project, Penobscot Tribal Land Management Program, and the Wildlife Management Program.
Yes, I'd be happy to. I'm really proud of that department, actually. And so when it's our largest department at Penobscot, we do everything from, as mentioned, wildlife management to our timber harvesting program to water quality, air quality, GIS mapping. All of that stuff is done really comprehensively in our department. We've had an exemplary record of protecting the Penobscot River Valley and our territories for time immemorial. We've had partnerships like the historic Penobscot River Restoration Project. And it's funny during this process to hear, one of the things I never expected to hear was concerns that the tribes wouldn't be good stewards of their land. And secondly, but it gets argued on both sides of the fence. And you'll hear at one point, they're going to be too strict with their water quality standards. It's going to affect this and affect that. On the other side of the fence, they're like, yeah, we don't know what they're going to do. They could mine. They could do all these things, which are ridiculously against our principles, core principles, and I don't see that ever happening. But so it gets argued both ways. But I'm really proud of our Natural Resource Department, and won multiple national awards, do a great job. And I think these lands will be in very good hands, as they are right now, by the way.
Kevin, thank you so much for your question. And before we go to another question, Chief Francis, I want to talk about some of the other areas we just sort of briefly glanced on earlier in the program. And one is about courts. We're talking about especially violence against women. Tell me what would change under the recommendations of the task force. What happens now and what would happen if these were implemented? And for example, you were talking about if there's a domestic violence case, does it depend on whether or not it's on tribal land or off tribal land, or if the person involved is part of one of the tribes or not? Just explain that.
So the Violence Against Women Act was passed in 2013, and it basically partially overturns the Oliphant decision, which said that tribes don't have prosecutorial jurisdiction over non-Indians in their courts. So what they recognized is with this problem, in over 85% of the offenders being non-Indian, there needed to be a local response to this. So that law is passed in 2013 with tribal provisions that allow tribal courts to prosecute certain domestic violence crimes. Before that, the Tribal Law and Order Act was passed. Now, keep in mind, these are all federal beneficial acts that the tribes of Maine have to be specifically mentioned in to apply. We felt VAWA that did away with like no double jeopardy, for example. It says right in the VAWA, nothing in this act preempts state jurisdiction. We felt like we had a rightful place to go after that. And we were chosen as one of the three pilot sites in the country until there were concerns raised about our application because of the Settlement Act. And so we have not been able to implement that since. So what would change is the tribes currently right now have jurisdiction over Indians in our court up to 1 year and $5,000 fine. And that would go to 3 years, $15,000 fine. And it would bring along those that enhanced jurisdiction to prosecute higher crimes, including certain domestic violence crimes against non-Indians.
So is this for crimes that are committed on land or even off of land, off tribal land?
Only on territory, yep.
Interesting.
And so what's interesting about this, though, and I will try to make this point, tribal members have been Maine citizens for a long time, recognized as Maine citizens. And nobody's had one problem with us prosecuting Indians in our court. And to hear concerns that due processes won't be protected and we're concerned about that citizen group, well, Maine citizens have been prosecuted for four decades under this system for these same crimes, and there has been no outcry from them or from anybody else about due protections, due process protections. So that drives me a little bit nuts, but anyway, I thought I'd get that in.
And before we go to one more, I want to ask about how would taxation change? What happens now and what would be different?
So taxation, this is really It sounds, anytime you mention taxes and all these other things, it sounds like a big complicated issue, right? It's not, I would dare say there is little to no fiscal impact on the state to allow for total taxation on tribal land right now. So like every government, governments need a tax base. And we need to be able to tax people, businesses. We need to develop our own schemes given our geographical locations, challenges to transportation, all of those things, infrastructure, to be able to entice business into Indian communities in this state. And when you don't have that taxing authority and a company has to weigh now in their mind, okay, what court am I going to be in, right? The state is going to challenge that's not a tribal court issue, or who's going to be taxing me? Am I going to get dual taxed? Who's permitting? We have a tribal permit. The state might be insistent on permitting. It just gets really complicated as it sits now. And I think it really kind of simplifies things and allows for the tribe to start to build a governmental revenue base that every government relies on.
Senator.
Remember, the tribes don't have a property tax base. You and your town, where you live in Cape Elizabeth or wherever, pay property taxes. That keeps your town running. The tribal lands, the reservations, are owned by the tribe. They're not owned by the individual tribal members. So if they had property taxes, they'd be basically taxing themselves. So that huge piece of the tax base that we all take for granted is gone, is not available to the tribes.
Right.
Oh, interesting. We have a call now from David Senapass, who used to be the chief of the Mi'kmaq Nation. Thank you so much for calling in, Chief.
Well, my honor. Chief Francis and Senator Carpenter was leaders in getting the Mi'kmaqs recognized. So I just want to thank them. I've been listening to your program for just about ever. I don't think the way that we are represented in the state is a lot, because I know that I've been to Canada a couple of times, and in Canada, the Mi'kmaq is well known, but I talk at the school systems in Maine quite a lot, and a lot of the people think that we still live live in teepees and wigwams and wear feathers and things like that. So part of the education system, the Mi'kmaq are looking for, that we did get recognized after the Passamaquoddy, 13 years after, I was part of that recognition, so was some of my father and some other people of the tribe. But I think that the people just don't know who the Native people of Maine is, and we're kind of put back into the Stone Age, especially representing us in Congress and all the legislatures. So, yeah, I think that there should be more education. I was part of the research of the casinos in Oxford on how was that secluded from the natives. But part of the Lands Claims Act, I knew what that was all about. But I just want to thank you guys for bringing this topic up and representing us, and because we need more representation out there of who we are. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. We'll move on to Eileen in Sebago. Hi, Eileen. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm the white mother of a tribal-enrolled Koyukon Athabascan who grew up in Alaska. When he was entering seventh grade, because we lived in Bush, Alaska, we had to send him to his uncle in Lower 48, and he went to junior high and high school. I totally know what's facing our Native country. And whatever you can do to enhance and strengthen the original peoples of your state, it's very important. I've been living in Maine for several years now, and this is an issue dear to my heart. If you look at the Constitution, the first law of the land is tribal sovereignty. Right now, 2020 is the 400th anniversary of the Mayflower ship, and that's also my ancestors, coming into Turtle Island and changing everything. Things like climate change, you need the indigenous voice to help you through the future, to help all of us. don't be scared of tribal sovereignty. Don't be scared even of casinos. My son was involved with a lot of national Native groups such as Unity and Center for Native American Youth, especially through the Obama administration. And so he went to different D.C. Conventions.
Eileen, thank you. Thank you so much for calling in. We're getting toward the end of the program, so I want to give our guests a chance to respond. Thank you.
Well, I think the last caller kind of hits it on the head. You know, there are, when you, in my 15 years or so, 14 years as tribal chief, in trying to work through these processes, we came to a place a few years ago where we got to a historic low. We have 200 years of representation in the chamber, no longer there. We were basically all but given up on the relationship. And for folks to bring us in, I remember the first meeting, legislative leadership, Mr. Carpenter was there and said, why not address this Settlement Act thing? And I remember the room getting weirdly silent for a while. Like, nobody could fathom that people really wanted to talk about this. And so we're so grateful for the conversation, but I have a lot of hope and that the positive impacts that will come from it will really have a long-term effect on the tribes of Maine. And I think there are a million ways to get to know in something like this. Just ask people to keep an open mind to really do their homework on this stuff. And it's my hope at the end of the day that that the fears and the sometimes purposeful fear-mongering that goes on around these issues on both sides will stop and we'll have a productive, substantive conversation about the reality of this issue.
And Senator Carpenter, quickly, the recommendations are out. There's a bill before the legislature, but this is not the end. The task force work goes on, correct?
No, the task force is done.
The task force is done.
And I couldn't have summed things up better than Chief Francis just did. I mean, we had a very productive process. We now have that turned into legislation. It's LD 2094, if anybody wants to look at it. And we go forward from here. Our first work session is next Wednesday. It's scheduled for all day. We have a lot of work ahead of us. So,
well, thank you both so much for being here. And I know you both are in the middle of very busy days to be here on Maine Calling. The voice you just heard, Senator Mike Carpenter, a senator from Holton, co-chair of the Judiciary Committee and co-chair of the task force we've been talking about, and Kirk Francis, chief of the Penobscot Nation, also a member of the task force. Lucy Suchek ran the board today, and Sandra Harris answers your call. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. This program will be broadcast again tonight at 8 o'clock. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.